So after that riot, then what do you do?
Then I got my orders for the Republic of Vietnam.
Which you knew would be coming.
Yes, I...
And when was that?
That was in August. I got my orders in August, and I had to be there the 27th of September.
All right. And what division were you then?
I was assigned to the 101st Airborne. But when I got there, in the barracks, before we were going to specific units, the guy that had been my hand-to-hand combat instructor in Ranger School was there. And he asked me, he saw I had a Ranger tab on my shoulder. We didn't know each other personally until that time. And he said, hey, their foreman, Westmoreland, is forming a long-range patrol unit, that company that we need to get into. He said, that's what we're trained to do. And so I volunteered for it. And basically, because I was a Ranger, I was accepted immediately.
Westmoreland, General William Westmoreland, and he was commanding U.S. military operations during the Vietnam War from 64 to 68. He actually remains a controversial figure.
Always was.
Yeah. Some viewed him as a capable commander who was constrained by political limits, while others blamed him for pursuing a costly war that failed to achieve its goals.
Looking back, it's easy to go over things, but I met him a couple times. He would come, we were kind of his baby there for a little while. And I actually had a guy that was in our platoon that had was born on the same block as Westmoreland up in the Boston area. Mm. So they would come talk for a couple hours. But, and this is just a personal, I don't know what you call it, but I never was impressed with Westmoreland. He never just seemed, in fact, my platoon sergeant got in a very big argument with him one time over what we were doing and how we were doing it, and which was kind of to see a E-7 dressing down the general of the army, you know, but he was behind. What I mean is he saw things later that he should have seen earlier, like the Tet Offensive of 68, which was a complete train wreck. We were going to the field, and our teams, we were finding these huge base camps. Nobody was in them. Before that, you know, you'd find a group, VC or something, but these were NVA guys that had on khaki straw hats. Every one of them had AKs, which is quite a bit different. Caisson was happening, and the Marines were surrounded, but the Marines are always surrounded. He committed to Caisson, and the rest of the country, it was obvious. It wasn't that big of a surprise to everyone but the top command. I asked, I can't remember his name. He was a lieutenant general, and he came and talked to us one time, and I asked him about that. I said, how could you not, you know, we were sending all this intelligence back. And he, this is a quote, he said, Sergeant, you do your job, we'll do ours. And that's all. Mm. You know, that was his explanation. Mm. Not, boy, we got caught off guard. Mm. We didn't see, you know, just. And at that point in time in my life, I realized this was kind of a futile deal. You know, if that's how they're addressing it, not listen to the guy that's out there getting what they wanted him to do. So.
But that special unit that Westmoreland set up, was it a six-man team?
We had we had four platoons. Each platoon had six teams that had six men in them. And that's how we went out, six men together.
And what did you, when you say you went out, what does that mean?
Going out like we go out into the Oshawa Valley or somewhere, and we have a specific mission. Find this, find that, do this, do that. And at the start of it, it was all intelligence. Then we started making combat raids, which is not, that's another thing, you know. Six guys in spite of John Wayne, are just six guys. And, you know, when we were running into these units that had 1,200 NVA soldiers, we were getting put in harm's way pretty quick.
Tell us what you were thinking immediately when you just landed in Vietnam. Was it just